Today in polytheism, we're going to begin our look at not a specific god, but a creation tale. This story comes to us from a place known to the Greeks as Mesopotamia and dates at least as far back as 1,000 years BCE and probably hundreds, if not more, years before that in one form or another. However, it was only rediscovered and translated in the latter half of the 1800s CE. When first published by George Smith, the man who also recovered the Epic of Gilgamesh, by the way, it was known as the Chaldean Account of Genesis, and has since been called the Babylonian Genesis, or, as it is perhaps best known, the Enuma Elish.
Yeah.
By the way, George Smith, he discovered the Epic of Gilgamesh. He found it in the wreckage of the library at Nineveh, translated it and his Chaldean Genesis, and made multiple expeditions to the library at Nineveh and surrounding areas, and still died by the time he was 36.
That pisses me off. Mm-hmm. I feel like such a mental weakling when I hear of that.
That guy, there was multiple George Smith. That's a very common name. So there's like six people doing those things, divvying it up.
It was really just a bunch of George Smiths.
I've got three more years to really make something of myself and then die of dysentery, which is the one part that I feel like I can actually accomplish. It's fitting that our first polytheism of 2015 is dedicated to the Enuma Elish because a recitation or perhaps even a performance of the piece was a standard part of the Babylonian New Year festival. Woo-hoo. So, Happy New Year, everyone. The tale opens with the words, "When from on high," or "When from above the heaven had not yet been named," which gives us the title Enuma Elish, literally the first words of the text. In the beginning, nothing exists, for nothing has been named. Creation through the power of language is a recurring theme in many world mythologies, including multiple Egyptian creation tales, as well as the neighbors and frequent cultural appropriators of the Mesopotamians, the ancient Hebrews. It's no mere coincidence that the god of the Hebrew Bible uses creatio ex specio. Full confession, I may have just made up the Latin there.
What I've read on that, it wasn't creation ex nihilo. That's a relatively modern reading of it, it was always a formless voidness.
And
that God was a fashioner. He was fashioning some pre-existing material.
The next thing I was going to talk about, which is the other very common mythic trope where everything starts out with water or abyss or chaos or this soupy mixture, which is what we see in Genesis. And in fact, in the Egyptian stories as well. But the actual separating of that water or abyss or void or whatever term you want to use occurs through the power
through
of
speech.
Language.
Okay.
So yes, it's not exactly creatio ex nihilo. There is something there. Modern Christians don't like to think about that too closely.
They just misread their text.
Exactly. So this swirling mass here in this text contains both everything and nothing and is made up of the primeval gods Apsu and Tiamat. Apsu is the god of fresh water, and Tiamat is the goddess of salt water, because, of course, Mesopotamians knew very well that there were different types of water, or sweet water is what they would call it instead of
fresh
water.
Who's the god of bottled water?
Dasani.
I am Dasani.
And there is actually Mumu there as well, and he represents vapor. Clouds, maybe?
He's a vaping god?
Yeah.
He's a very large nightgown god.
Yeah, exactly. He's this weird, almost vestigial figure who basically functions as the Smithers to Apsu's Mr. Burns.
You're wonderful, sir. That's a great creation.
Yeah. Apsu and Tiamat's waters mingle together, and they start producing more gods who generally show up in male-female pairs. We don't always get both names, but that's typically how it's going, with each pair surpassing their older siblings in power and in stature. When the sky god Anu begets or begot, or however that works, the god Enki, he is the most powerful of all the gods thus far. Enki, an important player in a lot of Mesopotamian tales, including Gilgamesh, is also known to some as E, that's E-A, and possibly is the same god as Nudimmud, which is my favorite name for a god.
Yeah. Nudimmud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want to read about some gods. What are you thinking of? I'm in a Nudimmud.
Enki and the rest of the younger generations of gods start doing what kids do best, and they annoy the crap out of their parents. Apsu and Tiamat try to get the kids to sit down and shut up for a few minutes and stop asking what's for dinner so Daddy can get his work done without everyone simultaneously singing songs from Frozen while fighting with their sisters and insisting that I watch this hilarious Vine by Taylor Oakley and give them money for a dozen field trips all at the same time. And
whoa.
Okay, that was a lot of stored up frustration.
Take a deep breath. Deep breath, deep breath.
Anyway, their peaceful means of calming the children prove fruitless, as they so often do, so Apsu proposes a more final solution. Really, really late-term abortion, I like to call it. Tiamat is horrified by the idea that they would kill their own children and grandchildren, but good old yes-man Mumu agrees with Apsu, and thus a plot is hatched to wipe out all the kids so Apsu can take a nap from time to time. The young gods overhear their plan and fall into despair. Luckily for them, Enki is more powerful even than Apsu, and he casts a spell of protection on the gods before casting a spell of sleep on Apsu. And again, we have the power of language being the key here. Mm-hmm. While Apsu got the first good sleep he'd had since the kids were born, Enki sneaks in, steals his crown, and kills him, taking on the role of the freshwater god for himself. Enki also imprisons Mumu by hanging him from a rope in his nose. If I'm ever given the option to dangle for eternity in a subterranean cave by a rope in my nose, please just kill me.
Yeah.
I'll take the easy way out. Once Enki had seized power, he and his wife Damkina gave birth to a son. The son was named Marduk. And as fate, which he himself would eventually become master of, would have it, he surpassed his own father and every other god in power and prominence. But we'll pick up on Marduk's tale next time. By the way, the Enuma Elish is inscribed on a series of 7 tablets. So far, we've made it through most of the first one.
Oh, wow.
Don't worry,
though.
It's
a long series.
There's a lot of what's left is repetition, and literally all of the 7th tablet and much of the 6th is just a list of different titles given to Marduk. So we'll kind of gloss over some of that stuff. Should be able to wrap this up in one more polyatheism segment, so stay tuned for that. Until next time.